The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Radio.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, good friends, good morning to you. Thank you so much for starting your day with us on AM 1420, The Answer. Whether you started it with Hugh Hewitt this morning and are continuing, that's fantastic. Or you're just starting it now with us and turning it on for Always Right Radio, that's even more fantastic. Thank you very much. I really do appreciate that. I never, ever, ever take for granted, by the way, the loyal listeners that I have on this program. I never take that for granted. No, you have a lot of choices. There's a lot of different radio out there. And now with all of the different podcasts that are available, too, it seems like everybody with a microphone and a computer can do what they call radio now. So there's a lot. And some of them are really good at it, too. I listen to some podcasts. But the fact that you tune in regularly to this program is very, very much appreciated and never, ever taken for granted. So thank you for that. Got a big show lined up for you today. Dr. Everett Piper, all of the guests are after 10 o'clock, so the first hour is going to be open for you at 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Dr. Everett Piper joins us at 1010. We've got a lot to discuss with him. He got mad at one of his readers of the Ask Dr. E section of his articles, or I should say of that day's column. He writes two columns a week for the Washington Examiner. His Ask Dr. E is kind of an advice column on how to deal with various things with respect to faith and our culture. And somebody really, really came after him for daring to defend the Republic. And Dr. Piper got a little mad, and I'm going to let him tell you what he wrote, and we'll discuss it. That'll be at 10:10 this morning. Daniel Bowles is going to join us at 10:35 as DEI continues to take center stage in a lot of ways. You're going to find that out coming up in the top 9 and 9 here in a minute or two, because I've got a ton of DEI stories, and we're going to talk about that with one of our guests. Daniel Bowles, by the way, beg your pardon, he's going to be with us on a different three-letter organization. Rather than the terrible DEI, we're going to talk to him about the terrible FBI. Sorry about that. But I have a ton of stories that I am going to get into on DEI in a minute. But the FBI, Jim Jordan, I talked to Jordan Monday, and I talked to him last week as well. And both days, he was livid and brought it up as I talked about the $1.2 trillion budget mess that was passed without even being read. Both times he brought up his biggest complaint about it is the $200 million out of the $1.2 billion, a trillion. His biggest problem was the $200 million, or was it $200 billion? I don't remember now. All those billions get mixed up here. But that was being put toward the new FBI Taj Mahal. He's so livid that the FBI, which continues to target Americans and treat us like suspects and treat us like we are under surveillance and so forth because of our conservative beliefs, that they're getting rewarded with brand new digs and new state-of-the-art buildings and so on and so forth. So we're going to talk about that. Daniel Bowles is the founder of a group that is investigating this. And the FBI, they say, violated American citizens' Fourth Amendment rights 278,000 times just in the Biden years. So we're going to talk to him about that at 10:35. And then at 11:10, we're going for a haircut. Not really, but everybody's favorite barber, Mario Innocenzi. I like to say it with the Italian pronunciation. But Mario Innocenzi will be joining us to talk about his latest effort to help those who have been suffering greatly because of ravaging storms. So he's filling a truck, and he wants our help. So that's what we're going to give him, and we're going to talk about that with him at 11:10. So Dr. Piper, Daniel Bowles, and Mario Innocenzi will be with us this morning. And, of course, I welcome you, 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. All right, without further ado, we're going to get to the 9 at 9. The only other ado is going to be the pledge. However, and I'm going to say this, keep those flags coming. I loved it yesterday. I brought this up on yesterday's show, talking about our pledge and about how I love your car flags. You're showing me your car flags. They're not always flags. Some of them are stickers. Some of them are adornments. Some of them are draped over their rearview mirrors. Some of them are in their visors. But I love the fact that you have your flags in your cars. And some people are sending me the little flag they have on their windowsill in their kitchen because that's where they're listening to the show every morning. Some people just took pictures of the flag that's outside their house on their flagpoles or hanging on their houses. And this is what they face when we do our Pledge of Allegiance. And I love it. I just started posting them yesterday on my Facebook page and on my, I didn't build a pick collage yet on my Twitter page. I have to figure out how to do that, but I am doing it on both of my Facebook pages, the personal one and the Always Right Radio one. So keep those flag pictures coming, and I will continue to post them because I absolutely love it, and I love you for doing it. All right, let's do that. Now let's go ahead and face those flags that you have. Put your hand on your heart and join us. And if you don't believe in the country, well, don't pretend. Just take a knee so that we can identify you as the Marxist dog you are. It's a little bit better that way if we know who you really are. For those who believe, however,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, friends, it's time. Let's get her done.
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
Yeah, let's get into the top headlines we're going to be talking about. These are some of the stories we're going to be talking about today.
Number one.
With 7 months to go until the election. 7 months tomorrow, because it'll be November 5th. Tomorrow's April 5th. Former President Trump tops Joe Biden in all but one of the crucial battleground states that will likely decide the 2024 rematch, according to new polling. A Wall Street Journal survey released Tuesday shows Trump with an edge over Biden in 6 of the 7 states polled: Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, and North Carolina. He is tied in 1, which is Wisconsin. According to the survey, Trump is up by 6 in North Carolina in a ballot that also includes third-party and independent candidates, 5-point lead in Arizona, 4 in Nevada, 3-point edges in Michigan and Pennsylvania, and a single point in Georgia. And again, they are tied in Wisconsin. But don't tell First Lady Jill Biden that Joe Biden is losing. She can't handle that truth. All right, we got a little bit of an audio glitch here. Let's try that again. So let's hear it, Jill.
But when these polls, like the Wall Street Journal one, land in the White House and he's losing in all the battleground states.
No, he's not losing in all the battleground states. He's coming up and he's even or doing better. So you know what? Once people start to focus in and they see their two choices, it's obvious that Joe will win this election.
All right.
No, he's not. He's coming up, or he's a little bit ahead. And once people see that he's so much better, they'll definitely vote for him. Holy goodness, delusion has found its home between the ears of First Lady Dr. Jill Biden.
Number two.
On MSNBC yesterday, former Biden chief of staff Ron Klain stated that prices are too high, and the price of gasoline is still high, and other prices are still high, and people feel that pinch. He said this when trying to analyze why it is President Trump might be having a lead over Joe Biden. He also said President Biden, quote, needs to make more progress on that and to try to use his tools to bring more order at the border and to try to clean up the mess that he was left by Donald Trump. Wait, what? Yes, he said that Donald Trump left a mess at the border that Joe Biden has to try to clean up. And oh, by the way, along the way, he managed to advance the latest hoax line against Trump that Trump called migrants animals.
I do think as the campaign proceeds, we're going to have a discussion about migration in our country and the contributions that migrants make to our economy and just generally the inhumanity in what Trump is saying about migrants, calling them animals. It's just disgusting. And so I think that'll be part of the campaign as it goes on. And I think that's a sharp contrast. And, you know, many Americans, however you feel about immigration as an issue, however you feel about the border, knows that a lot of these migrants come. They do important jobs in our country. They're friendly people. They know them. They see them, you know, at various work sites, and they don't think they're animals, and they don't want to hear them called animals. And I think that will be part of the campaign. But I think that the president needs to do his job first and foremost, which is to try to use his tools to try to bring more order at the border and try to clean up the mess that he was left by Donald Trump.
Donald Trump left Joe Biden with a border that was under control after it was out of control during the Obama years. The most control of the border in terms of crossings that we have seen in four decades. That was when Trump was there. Biden came in and immediately undid 94 executive orders that Trump had used to secure the border. That was immediate. So he's lying. But then again, he's a Democrat who works for Joe Biden or worked for Joe Biden, so he has no choice but to lie. It's in his blood. But we also need to address the animals claim. This is the latest bloodbath, the latest dictator on day one, the latest he incited violence, the latest, very fine people on both sides, the latest hoax in which they continue to lie about what Trump actually said. Did Donald Trump call migrants animals, or did he call murderers animals? You decide.
The 22-year-old nursing student in Georgia who was barbarically murdered by an illegal alien animal. The Democrats say, please don't call them animals. They're humans. I said, no, they're not humans. They're not humans. They're animals. And Nancy Pelosi told me that. She said, please don't use the word animal, sir, when you're talking about these people. I said, I'll use the word animal because that's what they are.
The murderer who killed Laken Riley, the illegal alien, crushed her skull, bashed it in so badly that it literally caved in. Now, I'm sorry for that graphic imagery this early in the morning. Anybody who can do such a thing, however, by definition, according to reasonable people, is an animal. His status as an illegal alien doesn't make him an animal. His status as an illegal alien murderer and skull crusher makes him an animal. But the left is already running with the fact that Trump says all illegal aliens now, not murderers, just all illegal aliens, are animals. We will not let them get away with it. We will indeed bring the context that they are hiding.
Number three.
Speaking of illegals, the eight Venezuelan illegal alien squatters who were arrested last week after being found in a New York City home with drugs and guns, come to find out they were previously apprehended at the southern border and then released into the U.S., one of them suspected of murder. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials confirmed all this yesterday. Immigration authorities arrested three of them again on Wednesday and lodged detainer requests for four others being held in local custody. One remains on the loose. New York police busted these migrants on March 27th after authorities were called to a Bronx apartment following a report of a person displaying a gun. Some of the migrant squatters arrested last week were released. Why? Because this is Biden's America. Illegal aliens get caught at the border and released into the country, even if they're violent. Then when they get arrested, they get set free on no bail. Why? Because this is Biden's America. Don't kill the messenger. This is the reality of what they have brought.
Number four.
As avian influenza, otherwise known as the bird flu, continues to spread among wild birds in the European Union, Officials are now warning of the potential for a future human pandemic. Stop me if you've seen this movie before, because I guarantee you, you have. On Wednesday, the European Food Safety Authority issued an alert noting that transmission between bird and mammal species has been observed, particularly in fur animal farms where outbreaks have been reported. Quote, if avian A, which is H5N1, influenza viruses acquire the ability to spread efficiently among humans, large-scale transmission could occur due to the lack of immune defenses against H5 viruses in humans. What does that mean? Lack of immune defenses. That means they're going to have to make some, aren't they? Here it is. To prevent the risk of a bird flu pandemic, the agency recommended taking steps to limit exposure and prevent the spread to mammals and humans. Quote, key options for actions include enhancing surveillance targeting humans and animals, ensuring access to rapid diagnostics, promoting collaboration between animal and human sectors, and, drum roll please, implementing preventive measures such as vaccinations. End quote. You're going under surveillance, and they're prepping the next round of poison darts. They're also prepping, by way of this term, pandemic, for mail-in voting this November. Mark it down. You found this out on April 4th, 2024. Watch and see what happens in the next 7 months.
Number five.
More illegals. A 46-year-old man from Mexico arrested and charged with the murder of a man down in Butler County. According to a social media post from the Butler County Sheriff's Office, the Hamilton Police Department charged Fermin Garcia Gutierrez with aggravated murder. He's currently being held at the Butler County Jail for an ICE holder, weapons charges, drug possession, and obstructing, according to the post. Last week, Butler County Sheriff Richard Jones said this guy had been deported 7 times. Jones also said Garcia Gutierrez had been in the Butler County Jail 11 times, using 7 different names and 3 different birth dates. Sheriff Jones, in an impassioned press conference yesterday, says he has had it with the Biden administration allowing these types of killers into the country.
Now, I've spoke a lot. This is killing us, and it's destroying our country. Everybody, it's affecting all of us. In Butler County, times the 3,300 counties in the United States, these people aren't doing anything. And they're causing it. No matter, it don't matter who elected them, what they done. We've elected these people, and they're not responsible is what they're telling us.
He was referring to 2 giant pictures next to him at the press conference. One of President Joseph Biden, the other of Homeland Security Director Alejandro Mayorkas, who, by the way, has been impeached for his complete open-door policy on our southern border.
Number six.
University of Texas has announced, here's the DEI I promised you, following the mandate of the state legislature, will unwind the DEI bureaucracy at the University of Texas, one of the largest universities in America. Specifically, they'll close down the DEI division, require some DEI deans to return to teaching, and eliminate other DEI positions altogether. This is a culmination of a year-long campaign to abolish DEI and restore the principle of colorblind equality. The University of Texas, in particular, had been captured by left-wing ideologues and ideologies pushing DEI materials that accuse the U.S. of being a system of white supremacy, recommending the word women as replacement for women, spelled W-I-M-M-I-N, to separate them from actual natural women, and affirming pagan polyamory and positive sexual identity. So the University of Texas, following the lead of the University of Florida, which is following new mandates in that state. So good news in some of the red states when it comes to DEI. We're not done.
Number seven.
An explicit requirement that Iowa's state, county, and local decision-making bodies be balanced by gender, a form of DEI, was repealed Wednesday, a move that Governor Kim Reynolds said was common sense, but which critics warn might lead to fewer opportunities for women. Before signing the repeal bill into law, Reynolds said the focus for boards and commissions, quote, should always be on appointing the most qualified people, end quote. That, of course, flies right in the face of DEI. The repeal reflects a growing trend across the U.S. as conservative lawmakers target many efforts to promote diversity as well as protections, this is how Yahoo words it, for historically marginalized groups as fundamentally discriminatory, emphasizing merit instead, which is exactly how it's supposed to go. We'll have one more DEI story in a moment, but first,
number eight.
On Monday, seven aid workers with the World Central Kitchen were tragically killed as a result of an unintentional killing by Israel, with Israel admitting fault, for which the IDF did apologize. That didn't stop Biden, though, from issuing a blistering statement this week, expressing profound passion and outrage. His statement early on mentioned how one of the killed workers was an American. It goes unmentioned in the statement, however, that there are also American citizens who are among the hostages taken by Hamas, which IDF is targeting. The hostages collectively are only mentioned once in the statement, toward the end, and in the context of pushing hard for an immediate ceasefire as part of a hostage deal. Joe Biden doesn't give a wild, fantastic rip about the Americans or the Israelis who are killed. All he cares about is playing to his Muslim American and Arab American base, which are casting votes of no confidence against him in primaries all over the country. And finally,
number nine.
The last DEI story may be the most ridiculous. Seattle Public Schools is shutting down its program for gifted and talented students, where the majority of them are white or Asian, citing equity concerns. The school board voted to wrap the highly capable cohort program. They decided this in 2020 after a 2018 survey found that only 3.7% of the students in the program were Hispanic and only 1.6% of them were black. Meanwhile, 11.8% of them were Asian. The majority were white. Numbers would suggest that within our city, predominantly white children are more gifted than other cultures and races, and we know that it's absolutely not true, said Kerry Hansen, the district's director of support services, back in 2018. Clearly, we're not identifying our children of color, and we need to get down to why. So the district began phasing out the gifted program in 2021-22, and as of today, 2024, it is on schedule to be completely gone by 27-28. Its replacement, called the Highly Capable Neighborhood School Model, will be available in every school by next year. In this case, instead of separate classrooms and schools for the gifted students where they can thrive, all students will be forced to remain together in the same classroom, and the teacher will have to individualize learning plans for each student, saying the changes will address historical inequity and include three tiers of service for students depending on individual needs, delivered in a way that honors individual cultures and backgrounds. So gifted and talented students, the hell with you, you privileged little brats. We're going to hold you back and make sure that you are in mainstream classrooms with people who can't read. That's it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420. The answer.
All right, which of the top nine spoke to you the most? You decide and dial me up. 216-901-0945. 888-281-1110. We got open lines next on AM 14.
Answer.
All righty then. It is now 937. Don't forget we got Dr. Piper coming up at 1010 this morning. So if you heard anything in the top nine at nine that tickled your fancy, you can dial us up now. If you've got comments or questions on them, I would love to hear them. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. But I'm going to start something else here, too. Hey, Seth, when is the NFL draft?
The end of April. I have to look up the exact date.
Do you know? You don't know the date? I don't know
I'll
the date
right
either.
Now.
It's coming, though. It's this month, right?
Yeah.
It is this month. Okay.
It didn't give me a date.
You and I used to do sports radio, a lot of sports radio, so we would have known this back in the day.
April 25th.
When is it? The 25th?
Yes.
The 25th. Okay. So about 20 days, 21 days, 3 weeks. Okay. You and I back in the day would have known that. And you probably would have known if you don't now. Maybe you do. Maybe you're still watching it closely on the side. I don't know. But do you know who the top prospects are? Do you know if I said names to you, would you know if they're in the, you know, top 10 or top 20 or first round prospects? Would you know that, or have you kind of?
I would know some of them. Yeah.
Okay. I would know very few of them. because they just don't draw my attention. The NFL doesn't draw my attention anymore, in large part because the NFL has gone beyond woke. They have insulted this country. They have embraced so many social justice issues. They have put messages behind their end zones about, you know, they've tried to temper them in like the last year or two, because it used to be Black Lives Matter, then it would, you know, stop racism, and now I think they're just stop hate, because they realize that what they're doing is very, very divisive, and I think now they're like stop hate messaging and things of that nature, but it's still just all kind of social justice warrior stuff, right? You're aware of that.
Yes, I like college football more. So
I do too. I do too. And that's the reason I do know some of the players that I do, because of, you know, I watched college football, so I know some of them from that. So they're going into their app. The reason I'm asking this is there was an article in Cleveland.com yesterday. Now, you obviously, I'm not going back to the Chris Quinn article that I just devastated a couple of days ago. But this was a separate article in Cleveland.com, and it essentially was justifying DEI in the workplace, saying that people should look at this as if it were a scouting report. You know, DEI doesn't necessarily make, you know, the job that you are posting for, your list of applicants, weaker. You're just looking at the scouting report and looking at different people's strengths. I'm really kind of paraphrasing this now because I'm actually unable to pull it up at the moment. Here it is. So the article in Cleveland.com, this is the tweet that they used, which is a quote from the article. DEI programs do not reduce the quality of the workforce, nor do they deter us from finding the best person for the job. What they do is remind us that greatness comes in a variety of packages, end quote. This is from the columnist Eric Foster at Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. And then the sub-headline is, look at DEI as kind of a scouting report. It highlights attributes that can get overlooked, which is interesting, because that's not what DEI does at all. And they have this headline over a backdrop image of the NFL draft logo. And I was thinking to myself, that's a really interesting thing to do. Now, I tried to click it and look at it, but of course, because it's Cleveland.com and they're broke, it's behind a paywall. They want me to pay to read any more than what I've already said. And I'm not doing that. I don't know how. Oh, they didn't make me pay for the op-ed from Chris Quinn that I was able to destroy. I was going to say, I was trying to figure out how I was able to see that. Anyway, it got me thinking. They're sitting here praising DEI and saying, look at it as kind of a scouting report. It highlights attributes that can get overlooked. Okay. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, since they put that over the NFL draft, what really needs to happen here for the woke NFL, which has embraced so many, you know, social justice policies and woke policies, DEI is right in their wheelhouse. And so what I want to suggest is that I'm starting with the Cleveland Browns. So if anybody here has access to, you know, Andrew Berry, or, you know, Kevin Stefanski, or any of the Jimmy Haslam, you know, Jimmy and Dee Haslam, I believe, are conservatives. You know, there's a chance that they listen. It would be on the down low. There's a chance that they listen to this show and this station all the time, quite frankly. So, hey, Jimmy, hey, Dee, let me make a suggestion here. Not that you guys are woke necessarily, but your team is and your league is. So how about you start walking the freaking walk instead of just talking the talk, NFL. I think every NFL team should be mandated, in the name of diversity, in the name of equity, in the name of inclusion, they should all make their draft picks on, what was the date, did you say?
April 25th.
April 25th. They should make all of their draft picks in the first round on April 25th, in the second through seventh rounds on April 26th and 7th. They should make all of their picks based on what their team doesn't currently have. Diversity. Diversity is important. Inclusion is important. Forget about all of this merit stuff. I don't want you looking at your 40 times that you time these guys in on their pro days. I don't want to see you telling me you're choosing this guy based on how he looked at the NFL scouting combine. I don't want you picking guys based on their production in college. I want you picking guys that you don't have. You know, things like trans guys. You don't have any of those. Your team is totally not diverse. I want the Cleveland Browns and the Washington former Redskins and the Minnesota Vikings. I want you to draft a white cornerback. You don't have one. I know you don't have one because there hasn't been one in the National Football League in some 20 years. Remember the last white cornerback to start in the NFL, Seth? You know who it is?
Jason Sehorn.
Jason Sehorn. You knew it as well as I did. Yeah. How should we know that?
Because it's the last one.
How should we know? We should have no idea who the heck that was. Because it's not like he was a Hall of Fame player. We know him because he was a unicorn. We know him because he was like a fantasy. A white guy playing cornerback. Now, for the uninformed, why don't white guys, generally speaking, get jobs as NFL cornerbacks? Seth, tell non-football fans why that matters.
Because you have to be a certain speed and everything else.
You have to be really, really fast.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, who's faster, black guys or white guys?
Black guys.
By a lot.
Yes.
It's the reason why in 20-plus years there hasn't been a starting white cornerback who can turn and run with fast wide receivers. Now, there have been some white wide receivers. The difference being they know where they're going. They're running routes and they know where they're going. Some of them have been very successful, like Cooper Kupp, for example. And there's a few more, you know, the Wes Welkers and the Julian Edelmans and so on. But these are not the burners that go down the field and catch the bombs. These are the underneath guys who know where they're going and they run precise routes and they don't have to be as fast to get to a spot and catch balls. But in order to stretch defenses and be, you know, the guys who go down the field and make the big plays, you got to be really, really fast. And if you're going to cover those guys, you got to be really, really fast. And guess what? There just aren't very many fast white guys. That's the reality. That's why there hasn't been one. So, Browns, I want you to draft a white cornerback. Not only do I want you to draft one, I want you to start one. When's the last time you had a starting white cornerback? Well, in the league, it was Jason Sehorn for probably 20, 25 years ago. For the Browns, maybe 40 years. Seth, you've been a Browns fan your entire life. Can you ever name a starting cornerback for the Cleveland Browns who was white?
I cannot. No.
Can you name a starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Browns' chief rival that was white?
I cannot. No.
Can you name another starting white cornerback other than Jason Sehorn at any era of any time?
I cannot, no.
Neither can I. No. So it is time to use DEI when it comes to drafting. There was a concerted effort, by the way, to use DEI to an extent when it comes to the quarterback position that started several years ago. And that was because there did used to be a form of discrimination in the National Football League against black quarterbacks. Because it was believed back in some earlier times, in the 60s and in the 70s, that, you know, the quarterback position is really, really complex. It's very difficult. It takes an incredibly fast-thinking brain. And it was thought by some racist-minded individuals who weren't trying to be racist but just really, truly didn't think there were a lot of black quarterbacks that could handle the intellectual qualities of the position. And it was terrible to think so. They just didn't give them an opportunity. And then over the course of the years, some teams started saying, you know, it's not right. So they started drafting and choosing or signing black quarterbacks to make them backups and just to kind of see. That was kind of DEI-ish. But that's about the extent of it. And now, by the way, the highest paid quarterbacks in the league are all black. They found out that, guess what, they can play the position. They do have the intellectual capabilities, and guess what, they're also way better athletes. And they are. And MVP Lamar Jackson can run a 4.3 40, and former MVP candidate, now current massage customer, Deshaun Watson, could run as well as he could throw. Super dangerous, signed the highest contract in the history of the National Football League. Now it's changed in that regard. So in that spirit, I want the NFL to do exactly that now. I want you to embrace the same DEI policies that the same social justice warriors out there are pushing in corporations and in schools. I want you to embrace them. You need to draft white cornerbacks. You need to draft trans players. How many, Seth, how many Asian football players are there in the National Football League right now?
I can't think of a whole lot now.
I'm thinking maybe a couple.
Maybe a couple, yeah.
I remember Dat Nguyen. I don't know if he's still in the league. Probably not. I mean, there was a really small handful that I can think of. Clearly not as many to represent in a true diversity and equitable and inclusive league. Not enough to reflect the percentage of Asian Americans in the country, the general demographic. So I want to see these teams draft Asian players. I want to see these teams live up to the DEI standards that they champion by drafting a significantly higher number of Hispanics. I don't know how many Hispanic players there are in the National Football League. I'm going to bet it is a tiny fraction of the percentage of Hispanics that live in the United States of America, which is what equity is all about, right? Which is what diversity is all about, right? So they need to ramp up that. And yes, white people. Guess what the majority, Seth, do you know what race is the majority of people in the general population of the United States of America?
White.
It's still white people. Oh. Tell me what the majority of the population of NFL players is.
Asian Pacific.
No, that would be black.
Oh.
74-75% of the National Football League's rosters in a given year are black. The next highest would be white. The next highest is probably Hispanic, and then getting into some very, very few players and some of the other things we talked about. If they are going to try to use the social justice programming that they are to try to diversify the National Football League by way of their slogans, by way of their outreach programs, their charitable donations to organizations, if they're going to donate to all of these woke places and they're going to promote all of these woke places in the commercials during our NFL games that we watch, on the fields of these NFL games where they play, in the stadiums with the sign, if they're going to do it, then freaking do it. There should be a majority on every roster of white players now. There should be a much smaller minority of black players. I think the general population of the United States of America, I think African Americans make up 13 to 13.5%. 13% of the roster should be black players. Well over 50 to 60% must be white players. Probably around 8% or so should be Hispanics. Probably around, I don't even know what the percentage now in the latest census is of Asian Americans, but that's got to be met. Pacific Islanders, since you brought it up, they're listed as well. And yeah, since DEI isn't just about race, DEI is about sexual proclivities, meaning do you like gay sex or do you like straight sex or do you like animal sex? What is your preference? If you are one of those things, we need to include them in the diversity drafting of the players, because this is what DEI says. If you have people who do like to dress in the clothing and wear the accoutrements of the opposite sex, you need to draft some of those people. Inclusivity demands it. Diversity demands it. Equitable outcomes demand it. Pardon me? Oh, and yes. And then Seth Williams, you deserve a shot.
That's what I'm saying. Look at that.
It is. April is Limb Loss Awareness Month and Limb Difference Awareness Month. So, yeah, I think guys playing on singular legs with a pole attached to the other one, I think ought to be given an opportunity.
You only need
to be
hand.
Drafted.
On one hand to catch a ball.
Tom Dempsey did half a foot.
See?
And one hand. He had one hand and he had half a foot, and he kicked the longest field goal in the history of the league for many, 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 many years until that was broken. But you do understand my point. I am sick and freaking tired of being told that we are racist or bigoted or phobic or something else if we say, you know, the people who should get into incoming college admission classes should be the most highly qualified. The ones that score the highest, the ones with the better grades, the ones that have an opportunity to do something with this degree, not people being turned away when they have those higher qualifications for somebody who has a lower qualification but has a different sexual proclivity than they do, and is a different color than they do, or has a different race of a grandparent than they do. That drop, that one drop rule that our guest yesterday talked about, Dr. Williams talked about. You know, I'm getting sick and tired of them telling us that DEI is a good thing because it diversifies our workforces. It diversifies our classrooms. It provides equitable outcomes for people who wouldn't be able to achieve those equitable outcomes without it. I believe that merit should drive every single career profession in America. Merit. Hardest workers, best outcomes, merit, not discrimination based upon appearance. And I think it's time for the multi-billion dollar National Football League. Their draft is coming up 3 weeks from today, right? 3 weeks from today?
Yes, indeed.
3 weeks from today, on April 25th, the NFL draft will commence, and I want them to walk the walk. I'm tired of them talking the talk. Start drafting people based on diversity. Start drafting them based on equity. Start drafting them based on inclusiveness. You're going to keep selling it, then start freaking buying it. That's the way I feel about it. You want me to start watching the league again? Which I won't, by the way. You either do one of two things. You start drafting by DEI standards and you walk that walk, or you shut the hell up and do what you've always done, which is draft people based on merit, their talent, their abilities, and what they can bring to your team as players, not what their personal identifications are. You got two choices, NFL. That's the way I want it to happen. And I'm daring anybody to draft somebody according to the way that I just did to make a point. That's what I'm daring them to do. All right, 9:56, we'll be back.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
It is every bit of that. Good morning to you. Thanks for being with us. Hour number two is underway, 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. I'm just still sitting here looking at some of the responses on social media for the idea, I posted it on Facebook. When the NFL draft starts 3 weeks from today, they need to embrace, they need to walk the walk, don't just talk the talk. They need to make every draft pick according to DEI standards. It has to bring diversity to the team. It has to bring inclusiveness. It has to bring an equitable outcome. No more of this drafting based on merit. They can't do it without being hypocrites. Walk the walk, don't just talk the talk. And I posted it on my social media. Well, actually, just on Facebook and my two Facebook pages. I'll put it on Twitter and Truth Social in a bit. But some of the responses are terrific. Keep those coming. All right, let's pivot now on this Thursday, the fourth morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord 2024. To the ongoing culture wars, of which DEI is a part, and we always look to our leaders to guide us through these things. One of them is Dr. Piper, Dr. Everett Piper, back with us after a week off last week as I was away. Dr. Piper is a university, former university president, twice weekly columnist with the Washington Times. He is a best-selling author. He is a podcast radio host. You can listen to The Rebellion wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, he is a commissioner in Osage County, Oklahoma. Dr. Piper, good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Good to be on your show.
Always good to talk to you. Thanks very much. I trust you had a blessed Easter weekend.
I did. The relaxed here. Wonderful weather in Oklahoma right now to enjoy that. So grateful for the truth of Christ and the truth of Scripture. He is risen. He is risen indeed. Amen.
Amen to that. And I would advise people to read your column from this past week. Or the early part of the week, I should say, over the weekend, about the resurrection. And, and take from that what they may, some of your words of wisdom. I think they probably already know, but it's great to hear it expressed as beautifully as you do. What I want to do, though, for this purposes of this conversation, Dr. Piper, is talk about your second column this week, because this one's much more interesting from the standpoint of disagreement from one of your listeners. And I think sometimes debate and disagreement works more effectively than the Mutual Admiration Society. So let's dive in here. Dear Dr. E., your writing is way too focused on saving America. Frankly, who cares if the Republic dies? I'm going to let that sentence marinate for a moment in the ears and in the minds of our listeners here. Frankly, who cares if the Republic dies? By claiming the United States is a Christian nation, you harm our witness. The Republican Party is not the only salvation of the church. Attempts to convince Christians that our hope lies in electing the right president is idolatry. Christians should not worry about their personal Christians should worry about their personal testimonies and not about politics. Signed, Gen Z Christian from Colorado. Now, Dr. Piper, I know that this one was like a burr under your saddle. You did not take kindly to the suggestion at all, and I'll let you tell us how you responded.
Well, first, I want to make it clear that this is a real objection. This was, and I'm going by his profile picture on Facebook. I'm assuming he's Gen Z by virtue of the way he comes across on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I also assume that he's a member of the Nazarene Church. Nazarene Church is a holiness church. It's akin to the Wesleyan Church or the Free Methodist Church. It's of the holiness movement, the conservative movement out of United Methodist Church that started in the Civil War era as a reaction to the unbiblical stance the Methodists at the time were taking in charging for pews. You couldn't get in the church and sit in a pew unless you bought it, and they also restricted blacks from attending the church. So the Holiness Church reacted to this unbiblical racism, quite frankly, and classism, and said, no, poor people should be able to come to church, and blacks should be able to come to church. We're all made in the image of God, regardless of wealth or race. So the Holiness Church is a church that I love. This has been my church tradition. Oklahoma Wesleyan University was a holiness university. But this objection that's coming from this Nazarene kid in Greeley, Colorado, that's where he lives, is not unusual. This is a poster child for what's going on in Gen Z, the current 20-somethings. They actually have imbibed the lie to the extent where they are, he's not the only one saying it. They are literally out there on social media saying, who cares about the United States? Who cares about America? We're evil. We've done all these bad things. Our nation doesn't deserve to survive. And Christians who are rallying around this Christian nationalism and this MAGA agenda should be ashamed of themselves, because you Christians who have over-politicized the gospel have given us a bad name, and you've ruined our testimony. That's what this kid is saying. And I want your listeners to let that sink in, because this isn't unusual. This is happening in your own family. This is the Gen Z attitude right now. Now, Bob, you know how I responded. I was a little taken aback. Well, no, that's not true. I wasn't taken aback. That implies I was surprised. He got my dander up, because it reminded me of a situation I had, 10 years ago or so, when I was president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, when I had a young faculty member, freshly minted PhD, very bright, very popular young professor, who at the front end of the Trump, it was before Trump was officially elected in 2016. This young faculty member was watching Trump and all of Trump's Trumpisms, which I've had difficulty with too. I've made it clear on your show that I don't like the way Trump behaves at times. I don't like his language. I don't like his attitude. I think it borders on immaturity at times, and I don't like the payback mentality that Trump sometimes engages in. And I don't like his boasting about his sexual infidelities and stuff that he does do in his books. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. However, here's the big however. If it comes down to Donald Trump or Joe Biden, there's no contest. The Republican Party is a pro-life party, not a pro-death party. The Republican Party officially says that women are real. They're not a fabrication or a fantasy. The Republican Party believes your daughters should have their own bathroom, and they shouldn't be subjected to dysphoric men who want to intrude into their showers and bathrooms and their sports and take their scholarships away. The Republican Party actually believes in private property and preserving it rather than stealing it. There's no competition. So am I going to vote for Donald Trump in this election season? Absolutely. And I don't apologize for it because I'm voting for a constitution. I'm not voting for a king. So I take this kid to task and I tell him, this kid from Colorado, and I say, look, you remind me of this young faculty member who in 2016 put something out on social media. He wrote an article and said, I will not vote for this man. I would gladly give up my freedom, said the faculty member. I will gladly give up my freedom rather than compromise my testimony. And the kid, this young faculty member, got beat up in social media for saying that. And I knew he was feeling crestfallen. So I walked across campus. I went into his office and I said, Dr. So-and-so, I won't mention his name. I'll be fair right now. I said, Dr. So-and-so, do you know why you're getting beat up so badly in social media for saying that? And he didn't. And I said, it's because you presume to give something away that is not yours. Saying that you would gladly give up our freedom is like saying that you think you have the right to sell the sidewalk in front of your house or to sell the street that goes by your house. Those aren't your things to give away. The community owns the sidewalk. The community owns the street. It's corporately owned, and freedom in the United States of America belongs to every American. You don't have the right to give it away. It's not yours exclusively. That's why everybody is angry with you right now for putting that out there on Facebook. So anyway, as you know, Bob, I take this kid to task, this kid from Greeley, Colorado, to task, and I say, you're acting the same way. Who cares if the republic dies? It's not your republic to put to death. It's my republic, and it's the generations that have preceded you. And, oh, by the way, while you're preserving your testimony because you don't think that Christian nationalism, whatever that is, a Christian patriot, I guess, anybody who's patriotic and a Christian is now a nationalist that you despise, while you're preserving your testimony, babies are being butchered. Children are being groomed. Women are being demeaned. The family is being destroyed. Our national borders are being torn down. Congratulations. Congratulations for preserving your testimony while your brothers and sisters, not only here in the United States, but around the world, suffer as the result of you letting the republic die. Shame on you.
You know, it's I shared your, maybe not to the level you did, because I also didn't have the previous situation that you just detailed for us with your professor, young professor, to go on. But I was angry as I read this, too, and at the idea and the suggestion, who cares if the republic dies, taking the church aspect out of it. And then that's a little hard to do, but because I know this is what his point was, talking about the salvation of the church and his own testimony and so forth. But just if you try to remove that aspect and just say plain old simple, who cares if the republic dies, from any other vantage point, how much good has this republic done for the world? How many lives have been saved because of this republic? How many people have been fed because of this republic? How many problems have been solved? To me, I've said this many, many times, and I don't mean to be jingoistic about it, but we are, excuse me, I feel like this has been the greatest force for good. This nation, this republic, the one born in 1776, has been the greatest force for good in the history of human civilization. Not that there haven't been other civilizations that did good things, but I don't think any others that have been as dedicated to it as this one. If this force for good were to be wiped out, again, taking the religious aspect out of it, the world crumbles. I feel like without a leader and a force for all things positive, even though we are not without sin, because no one is, at least that's alive today, with the exception, of course, of the living Christ in that regard. But you understand my point. We are not a perfect nation, but we have done so much more good. We are such a net positive for the world. I think you remove this republic, you allow it to die, you allow the world to crumble into anarchy and chaos.
And I agree with you. And here's the fallacy of the Gen Z, of the left, of the academy, because where's this kid getting this stuff? Where's this 20-something-year-old Greeley, Colorado, Nazarene church, evangelical kid getting this? He's getting it from his school. And unfortunately, he's getting it from his own church. Because what's popular right now is to malign America for all of its sins. And because America is guilty of X, fill in the blank, guilty of slavery, guilty of the Trail of Tears, guilty of internment camps of Japanese Americans during World War II, because we're guilty of these big mistakes, these sins, yes, they were bad, we were wrong, America needs to be thrown out. Who cares if America dies? Because we're no better than anybody else. Therein lies the fallacy, because what are they doing? They're doing the exact same thing that anti-Christians do to criticize Christianity. I'll try to make this brief. A few years ago, I was invited to join a panel to preview a movie out in Hollywood. I was flown out there. I was part of this panel. I was the only evangelical on the panel. I was the token. The other members of the panel were atheists. The movie was called Lord, Save Us from Your Followers. It was a movie critical of Christianity for being judgmental and harsh, et cetera, et cetera. It was a man on the street interview of all these Christians who were angry, red-faced, shaking their fists in the face of the gay and lesbian community and everything else. As the movie concluded, I was asked what I thought of it. And I said, well, actually, I think it makes a good point. And everybody was stunned. They thought I would pan the movie. I said, the reason it makes a good point is that it in and of itself is admitting that the soap of Christianity is the only thing that can be used to cleanse Christianity or any other worldview of its dirt. You're using the moral presuppositions of Christianity to critique where Christianity falls short. Thereby, you're admitting that Christianity is the rule, the standard by which we should be measuring right and wrong. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. And I think that's exactly what's going on in this disparagement of America. We're using the freedoms and the dignity, the beauty of our constitutional republic to judge ourselves as falling short, as we have. But in the very same token, at the very same time, we're admitting that our republic is the standard by which we should be judging not only ourselves, but all other nations. And if you get rid of the soap, everything remains dirty. You have to have the soap to do the cleansing.
You have such a great way with words. That is very, very brilliantly stated. And that's, you know, that's kind of the point I was trying to make, obviously much more, on a much more shallow level. And I appreciate the depth, to which you go to really explain this to people. And I hope they understand the importance of saving and protecting this republic for all reasons, for all reasons. But again, they do have to do with whether or not we are net good or net bad for the country or for the world. I think, being net bad, we want to wipe bad things out, but we do want to, preserve and protect good things. And yes, that means, of course, being the soap in order to make sure that we can cleanse all. Dr. Piper, we're going to take a short time out here because I want to come back and I want to talk about something else that you shared with me. And we're going to talk about the ills of social media, in particular, what they're doing to the psychology and psychological conditions of the youngest generation, the same Gen Z generation of the letter writer that we just talked about on this program. So stick around. We'll address that as we continue on AM 14.
Express your outrage. This message is sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life.
Okay, 10:24 now. We continue with Dr. Everett Piper. And Dr. Piper, this is going to be tough to do in a short period of time here. We got about 5 minutes, but obviously Easter Sunday has come and gone, and on that day, a lot of attention was paid to what was not about Easter, and that is the Transgender Day of Visibility. President Joe Biden chose to issue a proclamation declaring it so, and it led to a lot of conversation about the trans issue on a day we should have been focused on the resurrection. But nonetheless, it happened, and so that brings us to this. A discussion of social media and its hold on people, particularly in that realm, talking about the trans and the psychological disorders. So you shared with me, ironically, on social media and shared with others, part of what I'm going to read right now. A psychologist by the name of Jonathan Haidt was being interviewed on PBS, and he said in part the following, referring to the Framingham Heart Study, in which they were able to see that, quote, if one person takes up smoking, their friends are more likely to take up smoking. But actually, so are their friends' friends, and even friends' friends' friends. So the things we do spread throughout the social network. We affect each other. Now it turns out when you're looking at emotions, girls and women, when they study women, when a woman is depressed, that spreads out to her network. Whereas when a man is depressed, it doesn't. Women talk about their feelings. They're more connected in that way. Girls are connecting on social media. And when it turns out in many communities, the more anxious and depressed you are, the more you get support. The more extreme your symptoms, the more you get likes and followers. You know, of course, it's good to destigmatize social and mental illness. We don't want people to be ashamed. But boy, is it a terrible idea to valorize it, to tell young people, you know what, the more you have this, the more popular you'll be and the more support you'll get. Dr. Piper, he's defining social contagion, which is what is leading to this massive spike in the number of trans diagnoses, these phony diagnoses. You addressed it on Twitter. Address it for us now.
Well, essentially, I mean, and again, I encourage everybody to go watch this. It's on PBS. It's Margaret Hoover's Firing Line. And the psychologist that she's interviewing is a Harvard professor. His name is Jonathan Haidt. It is an excellent interview. He's essentially telling you what your grandmother told you. You're known by the company you keep. Be careful who you hang around with. In fact, as you know, I quote Solomon in the Psalms here, the Proverbs, I should say. In other words, he's essentially saying, he that walks with the wise shall be wise, but the companion of fools shall be destroyed. Your mom told you this. My mom told you this. Be careful of your friends. You're going to be known by the company you keep. Why? Because of social influence. You are going to start assuming some of the behaviors and the attitudes of those that you hang around with, those that you play with, those that you party with, those that you work with. We all know that all of us fall prey to that influence. And what we have right now is we're giving our children these iPhones when they're in their adolescent years, and Haidt covers this in his commentary with Hoover, and we're actually arresting their physical brain development. They've actually studied this. We are intruding, we're allowing these phones to intrude into the development of the brain, and it primarily is affecting girls when it comes to this contagion, because girls, by definition, are more social, more emotional. They want the support and the affirmation of their peers. And what happens? Is you have this incredible spike of dysfunction, of dysphoria, of mental illness. And thank the Lord that Haidt is actually willing to go on Firing Line on PBS and call it what it is. Call the transgender explosion, especially within females, dysfunctional and wrong rather than just a normal coming out of those that were already trans. And he uses data to prove this. He says that it's not just people coming out because the stigma isn't there any longer. They feel more comfortable coming out and saying, hey, I'm trans. He says, no, that's not true, because you see it in clusters. You see it in clusters of groups where girls are being influenced by their peers and by people they don't even know on social media to embrace this broken worldview because they don't feel comfortable as an adolescent in their body. Well, what adolescent does feel good about his or her body? I mean, it's part of growing up. This is a terrible thing we're doing to women. It is the ultimate of misogyny, and we should, as parents and as pastors and priests, step in the way and say, no, you are the imago Dei. You're made in the image of God. Don't allow anyone to dumb you down to dysphoria, dysfunction, and delusion.
That is such an important message here, and the company you keep is what it's all about. And so I want to ask you, and I know we only have a minute here, but Governor DeSantis and the legislature in Florida just passed a new bill. I guess it's a law now, or it's supposed to take effect soon, in which children under 14 cannot be on social media or have social media accounts. And if you're 14 or 15, you can only have it with a parent's sign off and a parent's permission. Now, I don't know how enforceable it is or isn't, but the goal is, of course, to try to keep kids away from these social media sites in which they can indeed hang with the company that you're talking about and can be affected by such. Others are saying this is just cracking down on free speech. You cannot do that to kids or anybody else. What do you say to them?
I don't like the government telling us what to do on this stuff. I admire Governor DeSantis' convictions. This is an issue of parenting, and it's an issue of pastors and priests. The church needs to do its job, and the parents need to do their job. And frankly, professors will use the three P's. Pastors, priests, parents, and professors. These three entities are the entities responsible for raising the next generation, and they're doing a terrible job. We're the ones that need to keep those phones out of the hands of youth. We're the ones that need to exercise our responsibility as the authoritarians in their life. And I don't mean that in a negative way. We do have authority. They are not mature enough to assume it all unto themselves. We need to be parents and stop being best friends to our kids.
Yeah, and the sad reality is those who are neither. They're just not there. You know, so many kids are growing up essentially without a parent. You know, a single parent household where somebody works all the time and is not present and able to monitor these kinds of things, which is why they're reaching out to try to stop some of these social contagions from being spread the way they are. I'm with you. I don't like the government doing it, but I want somebody to do it. So here we are. Dr. Piper, terrific stuff this week. As always, I'll remind everybody to follow you on Twitter at Dr. Everett Piper. Make sure that you follow Dr. Piper and his work in the Washington Times as well. Twice weekly, you'll read Dr. Piper columns there at the Washington Times website as well. Dr. Piper, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, blessings. Bye-bye.
Dr. Everett with two T's. Piper is the Twitter handle there. Follow him. I have retweeted, by the way, his article and this interview that he's talking about on PBS on my Twitter page as well, which is France Rants. FRANTZRANTZ. So make sure you follow us there. We'll be
the answer.
Okay, 10:35. Thanks again to Dr. Everett Piper. Great conversation there. If you missed it, and if you miss any of the great conversations we've had this week, as always, I remind you, about an hour after the show is when Seth and the team have them posted up and ready to go at whkradio.com. Just go to the podcast page there, and you can listen. By the way, if you are interested in anything else that I've got to say when we're done today, you can really make your ears bleed. I'm going to be doing the Gorka show this afternoon from 3 until 6. Obviously, you pick it up at 4 o'clock here on AM 1420, The Answer, but I will be in for Dr. G for the full 3 hours if you want to listen on sebgorka.com or on the Salem News Channel. So that will be a 3 to 6 today for America First. Dr. G is emceeing a gig tonight in Mar-a-Lago. I told him when he asked me if I would fill in for him, I asked him if he wanted to trade, because that would be kind of cool. And then I just flat out begged. I said, by the way, if you're ever allowed to bring plus one when you go to Mar-a-Lago, I'm a cheap date. Dr. G, if you're listening, and I know he does listen sometimes in the morning, I would like to restate my interest in joining you. But I will be sitting in for Dr. G at 3 o'clock this afternoon. All right, let's pivot now. I talked to Jim Jordan, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, on Monday, and I talked to him last Monday as well, as we do each week. And we talked about the $1.2 trillion budget bill, the spending bill, that I think was an absolute disaster for a lot of reasons. And I would list my reasons to him. And both times in the last 2 weeks, he came back at me with, yeah, but the thing that I'm most upset about was the funding of the new Taj Mahal for the FBI. So the FBI has just been weaponized against the American people, against conservatives in particular, people that are being described by the Biden administration as being domestic extremists or terrorists or what have you, and the FBI surveilling people at school board meetings and all the rest. He said they do not deserve this, and we cannot fund and reward this kind of behavior. So I completely concur, which is what ties in with our conversation now. The FBI has violated American citizens' Fourth Amendment rights some 278,000 times, according to research that has been done. And we're going to talk about it now with the Daniel Bowles. He's the author of America's Freedom Megaphone, The Case for Building the Statue of Enduring Freedom. He's been paying attention to this important issue and what the FBI is doing to us instead of for us. And he joins us now on AM 1420, The Answer. Daniel, good morning. It's good to talk to you. How are you?
Hey, Bob, great to be here. Appreciate your intro, and what a great topic, and lo and behold, I talk about it in my new book, so we can get into that too if you're of a mind.
I absolutely am. Let's do that. What happened to our FBI? Is it as simple as Joe Biden and Merrick Garland happened to it? You know, and I don't think it is, because I'm old enough to remember James Comey before Donald Trump became president, and it just seems like our trusted law enforcement apparatus is no longer trustworthy.
Bob, let's step back for a minute and look at this situation, your question, from a further away, you know, 10,000-foot perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that will show you that it is the nature of government bureaucracies, no matter what their objective, in this case, you know, law enforcement, surveillance, it is their objective to grow, to bloat themselves, to increase their budget year after year after year, regardless of the outcomes or the performance of that organization. This applies to all federal bureaucracies, FBI, no difference. Unfortunately, the FBI's, of course, mission is to get the bad guys, basically, and that's really where it impacts regular citizens, as it were. You mentioned 278, you know, fallacies or intrusions upon our freedoms.
Yeah.
A simple answer is this. Our bureaucracies need to be trimmed down, every one of them, specifically on the FBI. The leaders need to, you know, the two or three levels of executives all need to be fired, plain and simple. You know, we as Americans are getting tired of this abuse of our freedoms, and they're continuing on that path, and they will continue on that path until something is done. And, of course, the way you do that is you fire those who are most culpable, and then you reduce their budget by half. You make a statement. And that's what needs to be done with the FBI as well as a lot of our other federal bureaucracies. And, yes, in my book, you can find out our suggestion and solutions to these issues. And what's the name of my book? Wait, that's right, America's Freedom Megaphone.
The case for building the statue of enduring freedom. And we're talking with Daniel Bowles, the author of America's Freedom Megaphone. So just to kind of be a little bit more specific about this, too, so people know exactly what we are talking about with the FBI. And you're right, by the way, you cut their budget in half. And instead, what we are doing is increasing their budget and building them new digs. But we're talking specifically about Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which is a provision. Section 702 is a provision of FISA that was enacted in 2008, and it was exploited by the FBI to spy on members of the Trump campaign in 2016. People probably remember FISA for that. But what they have found, this is Senator Mike Lee from Utah, who is discussing this, who said, FBI just got called out in a community note on X. Congress take note of this. FISA 702 has been used for warrantless surveillance of U.S. citizens hundreds of thousands of times. Yet FBI demands 702 be reauthorized by April 19th without a warrant requirement for searches of U.S. citizens. So, Daniel, this is, you know, cutting to the heart of this, this is what the FBI is demanding here, and Congress needs to intervene by April 19th to stop is the FBI's ongoing weaponization against the people by denying them their constitutional rights and surveilling them, following them, searching them, and so forth without warrants. This has to be stopped. And the question is how many people in Congress are actually committed to doing so?
Yes. Unfortunately, well, let's hope that there are enough. Senator Lee is a great champion for individual freedoms. The guy is sharp beyond sharp regarding our Constitution and our laws, as it were. The FBI is out of control. It came to light after 9/11, excuse me, more specifically when Obama was doing the transition from his administration, the two previous, to President Trump. All the illegalities, the bugging of the White House, et cetera, we know everything that went on. They are out of control. So the question is, how do you sit on control? Unless, as Mike Lee says, we just squash their current application, they will continue on that. They'll continue on that path. And I go back to my general statement. They need to be cut down. They need to be cut off at the knees. And let's face it. The history of the FBI is not that stellar. I'm talking about the leaders, okay? Their objective is fine, go after the bad guys. But right from the beginning, good old J. Edgar himself, you know, we know what he was like. And it's wrong, and it's out of control.
It is both of those things. Now, you say that you talk about in the book what to do about this and how to bring it back under control in America's Freedom Megaphone. And like I said, my first reaction I see something like this is we've got to go after those who are allowing it. We've got to go after Congress. We've got to tell them to rein this in. And I'm looking at quotes from Josh Hawley. I'm looking at quotes from Mike Lee. I'm looking at quotes from people who are saying, you know, we know the problem. We know it's there. We need to generate support on Capitol Hill to yank that, you know, that ability from them to do these things. But that's a very shallow view of it. You have other suggestions that you talk about in the book. Tell me.
Yes. Our suggestions go to the root cause of the disharmony that we're experiencing in America today. And we believe strongly that, and we show it in my book, we know that all of this began in the 60s when the government education program was infiltrated by liberals who replaced the teaching of our founding principles, the teaching of our founding documents, the studying of the founding fathers, et cetera, and replaced all of those civics lessons with a indoctrination of liberal social engineering programs. I was in the classroom when the multiculturalism hit, and that was just the beginning. And, you know, it's been, what has it been now, 77 decades of that infiltration into our system. And so that has produced ideologues in our children as opposed to free-thinking citizens. And so we, in my book, we identify what has happened and the end result of it, which we're living and experience today, and then we offer a solution. This is the important thing. You know, we can sit around, and we do. We sit around a lot and bemoan what the situation of America is at today. But without a positive, uplifting solution, that's all we're left with is more complaining and finger-pointing. And so our book and the advocation of building the Statue of Enduring Freedom does exactly that in a positive way. The objective of building this historic monument, which will be a companion to the Statue of Liberty, and the image you can see on our website and in my book, and you can see our sculptors in their Chicago studio working on it. The objective of this mission, of this monument, is forward thinking, future forwarding thinking. We will be offering educational civics lessons and courses, excuse me, both at the Visitor Center and digitally on our website and through high school assemblies across the country. And that's where we're going to start, rebooting, if you will, rebooting American education. We believe that all the situations that we're talking about today are a result of young people going through our educational system and being propagandized into thinking that government is the solution to all of our challenges, that government is the solution instead of the individual. And that's where the problem started, and that's where the solution is going to start as well.
We are talking with Daniel Bowles, the author of America's Freedom Megaphone, The Case for Building the Statue of Enduring Freedom. Daniel, it's really quite a thing. You know, you typically think about some of the big government pursuit of people and their stripping of rights. You think of this in tyrannical regimes, not in the United States of America. We're supposed to be the country that has it right, where the people actually tell the government what they can do and what they cannot do, rather than the other way around. Do you see this turning, pivoting at some point in a way that is beyond the elections and the ballot box? And what I mean by that is, every day, Americans are looking at what is being done to them, and they're questioning how much longer can we put up with this? How much longer before the republic is essentially unsavable, and how long until we actually have to do something drastic? I don't know what drastic looks like, but I do know that if we're just saying, "Well, we'll wait till the next election cycle and we'll try again," I feel like we're going to run out of time. Do you feel the same way?
Now's the time. Bob, now is the time in American history. You know, we're at a crossroads. Let's face it. We know that. The core values of our country are beginning to fray at the edges. And how much longer are we going to put up with it is your question. We believe that that the bear, as it were, has been poked too many times. And You know, when a bear gets poked too many times out of hibernation, we know exactly what happens. The guy comes out with all claws poked out and ready to just slice away at things. And we believe that's where the American population is today. And that's why we believe that building this statue will be a rallying cry, again, a figurative megaphone for freedom from which all of us will be able to rally around and yell and scream, saying, we're not going to take this anymore. America will never succumb to democratic socialism and tyranny. And we're getting mad. We're getting frustrated. And again, I go back to our core message. We understand where this came from, and it's taken a long time. It's taken decades, all right, of infiltration and propagandizing the American education system. And so that's where we're going to start with that, reinstituting and rebooting American education. Listen to this from our book. Our freedoms have not adequately been studied in public education over the last 60 years. Wow, how about that? Last 60 years, the very definitions of America's once common vocabulary, such as freedom, democracy, equality of opportunity, individual responsibility, religion, and the balance of power have been hijacked and politicized in a way that creates, and here we go, creates ideologues rather than citizens. And this loss of knowledge and critical thought is testing the very limits of our republic. And we know what an ideologue is. It's a person that holds unreasonable belief in groupthink. They are products of propagandized education for years and years and years. And so we understand that. And yes, these people, this is explained in my book, by the way, imagine that. But this is all explained in my book, that this is a plan. It has been a plan for a long, long time by those who want to fundamentally transform America. We know what that means now. When Obama mentioned that to us in his first campaign, we looked at each other and said, well, what does that mean? Fundamentally transform America. We didn't know what it meant. Well, guess what? That was part of his plan. He didn't want to be clear about what his fundamental transformation was intended to be, but now they are out in the open, clear as day, and we're going to do something about it, Bob.
Well, we need to. We better. And, you know, because the opposite of fundamental transformation of America is a reaffirmation of America. And I think that's what we need to do. And I love that aspect of the project. You know, the statue that you're talking about kind of reaffirms and, you know, bookending the continental United States with the Statue of Liberty on one side and the Statue of Enduring Freedom on the other side. It's symbolic, but sometimes it takes symbolism to spark action and to spark whatever that's going to look like. Again, I don't know what it's going to be and what it's going to take and what shape it will take for us to finally push back. But we do need symbols sometimes, and I think that's what makes this such a great idea. I'm looking at a giant picture of it right now from your website, and I'll encourage people to do the same thing. You can see this glorious picture of the Statue of Enduring Freedom that is being discussed here at Freedom Alliance LLC.com, freedomalliancellc.com, which was connected to the homepage. And I'll tell you what, Daniel, I love the concept and I love the idea, and I don't know what it'll take to make it happen. I don't know what it'll take to raise the funds and to get the approval to do it, but I think we need something like this to kind of spur kind of reinvigorate, I guess, national pride in what we actually have here.
Great insight, Bob. That's exactly what we're all about, and we believe that now is the time. I mean, listen, the truth is I've been involved in this project quietly since 2017, myself and our group, but only in the last few months have we started to introduce it to the American population, and that's, you know, in concert with the publication of my book. And so we're trying to get the book, into society as much as we can and get more people looking at our website. And therein, in the book, you know, we make the case for building it. And yeah, if it's meant to happen, it will happen. We believe that now is the time to make that happen. And we have strategies in place to address funding, because, yeah, it's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
But so what? You know, symbolism, like you said, symbols are important. And how about this, Bob? In the time that you and I are living in right now, what's going on? These liberals that we're talking about that are hell-bent on destroying America and the fabric of our American civilization, these individuals are tearing down monuments and statues as quickly as they can. And what better time for us, those who are, you know, simple, common-sense patriots, what better time for us to say, and directly, in your face, we're going to build this 300-foot monument because it's important, and it won't be torn down, and we will not be quieted.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. It's not just what you just said is true. The progressive left, including the current regime, is all about tearing down statues and monuments and things that they don't believe, you know, stand for the United States anymore for whatever their warped reasons are. But it's more than just tearing down. They are greenlighting federal tax dollars to build things like monuments and museums to, you know, their pet causes, to things like LGBTQ communities. They're pouring money into museums and monuments and bridges and arches and things of that nature to celebrate the things that are important to them, and moreover to, I think, buy votes and to try to curry favor with that vote, that part of the voting base. So if they can put aside federal tax dollars for things like that, which don't reflect the entire country, why not for something like an enduring freedom statue, which would, just like the Statue of Liberty, which would represent all of us and not just individuals in certain sectors of the population?
Well, and yes, Bob, amen to that. And that will happen. Again, we have some strategies in place that we're not ready to make public yet, but we will pursuing that. And listen, I want you and your listeners to hear this. It's short, from Thomas Jefferson. Who is he? That's right, one of the main author of the Declaration of Independence. I'm going back to your opening comments about FISA. Quote from Thomas Jefferson. Tell me if this sounds familiar. Our world today, when the government fears the people, there is liberty and freedom. When the people fear the government, there is tyranny. Is that the times we live in today? When the people fear the government, there is tyranny? Absolutely, you know, and absolutely double. I mean, my gosh, FISA is an example of that. They're invading individual freedoms. Just listen to Senator Lee, and he'll set us straight on all of that. But when the government fears the people, there's liberty. Well, the government doesn't fear you and I. They don't fear us at all. They're happy to be squashing our rights. And that's going to change.
Well, it better. Like I said, this republic will never recover. I mean, it is that crucial. And we need leaders, and we do need the resources that it takes to push back as well. So, Daniel Bowles, I really appreciate the conversation. I appreciate the book, too. It's America's Freedom Megaphone, The Case for Building the Statue of Enduring Freedom. All of these issues that we are talking about that afflict us right now, they need to be addressed. And I think there does need to be a rallying point and a rallying cry, and maybe rallying behind symbols like this is something that would spark that pride again. Daniel, thank you for the time. I appreciate it. Very best of luck to you.
Bob, you're a good host. Thanks for your time. God bless America.
God bless you. Thank you. FreedomAllianceLLC.com, by the way. FreedomAllianceLLC is where you can order the book and also see that statue. By the way, it's male, and I love that. It's a perfect compliment to the Statue of Liberty that sits in New York Harbor. It is a male statue. It's on the same type of pedestal. It's a glorious, glorious idea. We'll take a time out here and come back on the other side. Our good friend, we're going to get our hair cut, kind of, sort of. Mario, the barber, will be joining us to talk about raising, or I should say donating, some goods and some items to help those who are suffering from tornadoes and other things. He's been a champion of helping people through things like this through the years. He's at it again. We're going to talk to him about how you can help right here on Always
at DennisPrager.com.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I, have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, hour number three is underway. It's 8 minutes past 11 o'clock on a Thursday, the fourth morning of the fourth month, year of our Lord 2024. If you missed anything so far, you can always catch up. That's the beauty of the podcast page. Go to WHKRadio.com after the show, about an hour after the show. Don't do it during the show because then you're just going to see it's a cycle. If you go back to listen to something you missed earlier, then you're going to miss what you're doing now, what we're doing now, and then you're going to have to go back and catch up on that later. So how about we just listen live now and then listen to what you missed a little bit later on at WHKRadio.com. We had Dr. Everett Piper on, a terrific conversation with him at 1010 about some very important stuff, including the saving of the Republic and the extraordinary importance of it from a secular and a religious point of view. We just talked to Daniel Bowles as well about the FBI and about what we can do to reinvigorate pride in the United States. He's got the idea of the Statue of Enduring Freedom, and I got to tell you, I'm a huge fan of the idea. The goal of this thing, of course, is to put it in the on the other side, in the Pacific, or just off of the coast, so that we kind of bookend the United States with these two glorious statues, Statue of Liberty on one side, the Statue of Enduring Freedom on the other side. It's a really phenomenal idea, and it looks just amazing, the idea. So check that out, again, at freedomalliancellc.com. I want to pivot now and come back closer to home, specifically here into Ohio, about 3 weeks, right, I think. Deadly tornado hit Indian Lake. And there were a lot of people down there. The tornado swept through 11 Ohio counties, but it was specifically was very bad at Indian Lake. Governor DeWine went down there on Tuesday to get an update on the progress. Three people were killed. A lot of homes and businesses destroyed. They need help. And whenever somebody needs help in a matter like this, one guy who steps up each and every time is our friend Mario, our favorite barber. Mario Innocenzi is stuffing trucks with supplies and needed items for the victims down there, and he needs our help again. Mario, it's so good to talk to you again, my friend. How are you?
Bob, I'm fantastic. Good morning. Thank you for having me on your show today, sir. Excellent show so far.
Thank you, my friend, and thank you for what you always do. You always have your eye out for people who are in need due to one calamity or another, and you are not just, you know, doing the requisite, saying the prayers and, you know, hopes and prayers and thoughts and prayers to you. You are always active in getting something done about it. So I just think that's a... that's just a phenomenal thing. I think it's such a credit to you, and I'm more than happy to do anything I can to help get the word out so that everybody can join in on this effort. So tell us what's happening.
Well, Bob, as you know, we collected a whole trailer full and truck full of goods over the last 2 weeks. My wife and I and my volunteers, we loaded, we stacked, we sorted, we took it down. My brother and I took it down on Monday. We took her to a place called Lulu's Diner inside of Indian Lake. She was spared, so she's kind of like a makeshift place where people can come eat and get donations and help them out a little bit. When we got there, they were absolutely empty of goods. They had one, Tupperware totes that people buy.
Yeah. But
they had one of those full of canned goods. We completely restocked them head to toe. Now, those folks have absolutely nothing. As I heard, there was one trailer park. That, of course, trailer parks always have a bullseye. 176 people in it have absolutely no place to stay, no food, no personal goods, scattered over debris fields for miles and miles and miles. They really need our help. So what we're asking for is donations of non-perishable goods, diapers, children and adult diapers, bedding. It's got to be new bedding, guys, new blankets, new sheets, new pillows, the whole nine yards. They have nothing. Non-perishable foods, canned goods, and stuff without can openers, stuff they can pop the lids and be able to eat the stuff without electricity because they have no electricity yet. FEMA is FEMA, and it's a bureaucratic government office that's dragging their feet as usual. Yes, Governor DeWine was there on Tuesday, but what's been done? Probably nothing.
Yeah, no, you exactly.
They need garbage bags.
Yeah, but a photo op was done. Photo op was done. I'm sorry, Mario, but to answer that question, photo op is done. He's not going to get anything done. The people who are going to get something done are people like you and the people like my listeners and the people like your friends and customers and fellow patriots and, you know, the people that you interact with on a regular basis. You're the kind of person. We're the kind of people who are going to get things like this done. So, yeah, we cannot count on the government for it. I'm sorry to interrupt. Please continue.
No, you're not interrupting at all, sir. And it's not me, Bob. It's the listeners. It's my customers. Anytime a natural disaster happens, I usually don't even have to say nothing. Cars are pulling up in front of my barbershop dropping stuff off. And just like today, we were on a show yesterday, Seth, and I've already had five people drop off canned foods and things like that. So the word is getting out. We need to fill up the trailer. It's a 20-foot trailer. We'd like to have some gas cars. We definitely need gas cars. Gas is $3.59 a gallon, where it was $1.87 a gallon 3 short years ago. Gas cards helps us out a lot. Baby items, diapers, wipes, those are huge. Baby and children's clothing. Now, we took clothing down last time, but a lot of it was used. Some of it was marginal, some of it wasn't. But we need some new clothing for these people. Guys, it doesn't matter to me what you bring. It's all in your hands. Whatever God tells you to bring, bring. We need everything for these folks, and I assure you, 100% of everything you bring to me goes to them. I'm not like one of the big charities where you donate $1,000 and maybe $10 of that goes where it's got to go. Every single penny, every single item gets to where it's going, guys. I show you it being brought in my barbershop. I show you it being loaded. I show you us driving down there. I show you us handing it out. And if we're there long enough and we can volunteer, I show you us volunteering, picking up garbage, picking up whatever we can do, building, whatever. We are there to help. We are a tool to help. And I need your help to make that happen.
Mario, where is your barbershop?
We're at 7526. That's 7526 Broadview Road. We're on the corner of Pleasant Valley and Broadview. There's a shopping center. And the only thing, there's an Acme, there's a TJ Maxx. I'm closer to Big Lots. We're in Parma, easy to find. My number is 216-520-1977. One more thing, Bob. Joe Burdick from Burdick Custom Signs stopped in today. He brought us a beautiful 24-inch wooden flag that we're going to raffle off, and he said we should get $20 a ticket. We're going to sell tickets, and we're going to pull this live. Whoever comes in, buys a ticket, we're going to pull it live, and they'll win a beautiful Burdick Custom flag. American flag, let me say that. It's a wavy one. It's absolutely gorgeous.
I love it. It's on your video. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's on a video, I should say, in front of your shop on your Facebook page right now. I saw that this morning, actually, and I love Burdick's custom flags. He's got one for me as well. Absolutely love it. He's a great guy. It's a great
patriot.
Product. A total patriot. But you both are. You both are. And I love the fact I'm watching. I'm looking at him right now. He's standing there telling everybody about this, holding the flag in front of Mario's barbershop. I mean, I see all of this great stuff there. And I just want people to know two things. One, where to go to make a donation. If you've got some of the goods and some of the supplies that they need, or if you want to make a cash donation or buy a gas card or what have you, you can do all of those things at Mario's Barbershop. But also, just to remind everybody about Mario's Barbershop. I mean, I don't know how busy you are every day, and I don't know how much time you have for new customers and clients and appointments and everything else, but people that need to get their hair cut, I want everybody to know where the best place in town to go is.
Bob, I thank you so much. We always need new clients. I love new clients. I love all my customers. They're not customers to me. They're friends. I've been cutting most of their hair for 40 years. God bless them all for coming to me. And I want to say I love your show. I listen to your show. You are a true patriot. I heard you speak again at the Prager event. You are absolutely phenomenal. Phenomenal. If you haven't heard Bob speak in person, by God, get out there and go. Next time he's out, go listen to Bob speak.
Well, you're very kind, Mario, but let's keep the focus for now on the suffering victims out there in Indian. For those who don't know, by the way, Indian Lake is out, what, toward Lima, right? Kind of,
it's not 70 miles west of Columbus. And listen, Bob, I never heard of Indian Lake before this disaster. And when I went out there, I was in awe. It is such a beautiful community that I've never seen like in Ohio. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I only looked it up when I knew about the damage. When I heard about the tornado, I said, where the heck's that? And I looked it up, and it's not as far south as Columbus, and it's not as far west as Lima, but it's on the way. It's kind of in between Columbus and Lima would be the best way I could describe it, south of Findlay. But it is a beautiful, beautiful community there. I agree with you. I'm looking at some of the pictures, and, obviously it's devastated right now, and it needs, support and help and everything else, but it is a beautiful place. They're fellow Ohioans. They're fellow Americans, and that's what we do, right? We've got to step up and help the Ohioans and fellow Americans.
Bob, we're gonna load it up. We're going to deliver. We're going to help. We're taking everything to Lulu's Diner down there. As I said, she was spared. She's using her restaurant as a donation center. Let me tell you about this young lady. She's absolutely fabulous. She's feeding the residents out of her own pocket breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. She is just a phenomenal young lady, and that's what we're taking everything to. And I didn't know her from Eve. I just saw that she was doing this. I said, that's where we got to go. And that's where we're taking everything, guys.
Please help us. Do you have a departure date, Mario, so people know when to get these things to you by?
I want to be leaving by next Monday. So not this Saturday, not next Saturday, but the following Monday. I want everything loaded up and so I can hit the road. That's my day off.
So we got about, based on what you just said, about 9 days. About 9 days we have to get stuff to you. Okay, got it.
That's correct.
All right. So, again, Mario's Barbershop. Give that location again, Mario, so people know where to go.
Yes, sir. 7526 Broadview Road, Pleasant Valley Shopping Center. My phone number is 216-520-1977. It's on me 24 hours a day. I'll answer any question you have. Thank you. God bless you, and God bless this United States of America.
You're a true patriot, my friend. God bless you, too. Thank you, Mario.
Thanks, Bob.
That's Mario Innocenzi, Mario's Barbershop. Mario also happens to be an executive board member of the Geauga County Republican Party as well. He is active. He is out there. He is working so hard on behalf of not just, you know, the political side of things, which is important that we have leaders that we can trust and leaders that can get things done, but he goes out there and gets things done himself. So, It's certainly worth your time to, if you can't make the drive to Mario's place, it shouldn't be that hard to get to, by the way, but if you can't or you don't have time to and you just want to make a donation, call his phone number, you just heard it, and do what you can to help. Mario puts his best efforts into this, so does family and friends, and that's what we all need to rally behind. All right, it's 11:19, we'll take a time out here, we'll come back. I've got time for calls between now and 11:45 when we ask Bill O'Reilly to take it to the top of the hour, so... And then I'm going to rest up a little bit, try to get the pipes ready and raring to go for Dr. Gorka this afternoon. I'll be in for Dr. G hosting America First at 3 o'clock. Of course, we know you won't hear that first hour here, but you can listen to it at sebgorka.com, and you can listen to his whole show on Salem News Channel. And I'll be there from 3 to 6 today hosting for Dr. G. So if you want to get in before we're done this morning, do it now at 216-901-0945. What's your question? What's your comment? What do you want to say? What do you want to discuss? We'll do it together on Always Right.
Each office is independently owned and operated. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, it's 11:23. Thanks for being with us on AM 1420, The Answer. Phone lines are open to you now if you want to get in on any of the things we've discussed today with our guests or during Top 9 at 9. I want to hit back on something at Top 9 at 9 before the bottom of the hour here, so allow me to reiterate the importance of this. There are two stories that I did that I believe are directly tied together, and I want you to consider them, and then I want your thoughts on them. And they all have to do with November 5th. The first part of this is the polling that continues to go in the direction of President Trump. A Wall Street Journal survey released Tuesday, it's the most recent round of polling of the battleground states, seven battleground states surveyed, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, North Carolina, and Wisconsin. Six of the seven showed Donald Trump winning those six crucial battleground states. The seventh, Wisconsin, has Biden and Donald Trump tied. That's important, and I'll explain why in a moment. They brought this up to Jill Biden, the completely delusional First Lady, Dr. Jill Biden. And what did Jill Biden say on, this is CBS, when informed of these polls. Listen to what denial sounds like, denial and delusion.
But when these polls, like the Wall Street Journal one, land in the White House and he's losing in all the battleground states.
No, he's not losing in all the battleground states. He's coming up and he's even or doing better. So, you know what? Once people start to focus in and they see their two choices, It's obvious that Joe will win this election.
All right.
He's not losing in all the battleground states. He's coming up. He's even, or he's doing better. And once people focus, it'll be obvious, that he's going to win this election. Okay. Why am I tying this to the second story? You'll see. The numbers, while favoring President Trump, are not extraordinary. They're close. The biggest is a 6-point lead over Biden in North Carolina. 5 points in Arizona, 4 in Nevada, 3 in Michigan and Pennsylvania. Michigan and Pennsylvania are within the margin of error. Nevada is very close to the margin of error of 3.5, so it's a 4-point bulge there. A single point in Georgia, and again the tie in Wisconsin. Not anywhere near a big enough lead for it to be fraud-proof or tamper-proof or mail-in balloting-proof. Which brings me to the second story. The bird flu and avian influenza, they now say, is spreading among wild birds in Europe. On Wednesday, yesterday, the European Food Safety Authority issued an alert noting that transmission between bird and mammals has been observed. Guess what we are? If avian A, which is called H5N1, influenza viruses acquire the ability to spread efficiently among humans, large-scale transmission could occur due to the lack of immune defenses against H5 viruses in humans. To prevent the risk of a bird flu pandemic, the agency is recommending taking steps to limit exposure and prevent the spread to humans. Key options for actions in this effort include enhancing surveillance techniques targeting humans, ensuring access to rapid diagnostics, promoting collaboration between animal and human sectors, and implementing preventative measures such as vaccination. Here we go again. Stop me if you've seen this movie before, and stop me if you know how it ends. This avian flu threat, this pandemic, didn't come in 2021. It didn't come in 2022. Didn't even come last year in 2023. Suddenly, a new pandemic, which is being described by some of the alarmists as being far more deadly than COVID, it only arrived here in 2024. Now, which of these things is not like the other? 2021, there was no election. 2022, there was a midterm election, but no presidential election. 2023, there was no election. But 2024, hey, there's an election in 7 months. There's an election in 7 months, and suddenly the United States and Europe are collaborating to discuss how to deal with this potentially dangerous, deadly pandemic, a new variation of the bird flu, the avian flu. Why do you think that is? And in addition to the spread of the potential spread of the virus, in addition to that, we need to target and surveil humans to see where they're going, just to make sure that they're not spreading this. Tell me that isn't the first step toward lockdown. Tell me key options and action for actions include enhancing surveillance targeting humans. Why are they surveilling us unless they're going to tell us, hey, don't go there. Hey, stay away from there. Hey, don't go near one another. And then implementing preventative measures such as vaccinations. Tell me, is there already an existing avian flu vaccination, one that has undergone 8 to 10 years of human trials so we know exactly what the long-term effects are? Or are we going to be fast-tracking in warp speed time new vaccinations, experimental in nature, but they're really important because the flu or the avian flu is going to be much more deadly than the COVID virus was. Tell me you're not, or tell me you are going to institute ballot drop boxes and mail-in voting again without saying the words, we are instituting ballot drop boxes and mail-in voting again. You just did. You told us about the avian flu, about monitoring human movement, and about threatening us with new jabs in our arms. Maybe now you know why it was so important for us to try to pass some sort of medical freedom bills in our Congress, in our state legislatures all across this country that say, no, we don't have to take your jabs, and no, we don't have to follow your guidance. We are free to make our own medical decisions. Between the medical threats that we face with this again and the fact that they have done this now and started this nonsense 7 months before the most crucial election of all of our lives, if it's lost upon you, then you need to be found. We'll be right back.
The Answer.
Okay, final segment of the broadcast. It's 11:35 now on AM 1420, The Answer. But like I said, do not fret. I've got more to say, and you'll have three more hours to hear it if you choose to listen to Sebastian Gorka at sebgorka.com starting at 3 and on AM 1420, The Answer starting at 4. Of course, we have a little bit of a programming shift there, but I will be hosting America First for Dr. G, and I'm very much looking forward to that. We're going to talk to Kurt Schlichter, by the way. What's that?
Bob, real quick. We were talking about before. I want to change my bracket.
Oh, the bracket Biden bracket buster challenge.
Yeah,
I guess I probably should have called this building back bracket or building back it bracket better or whatever he says.
Whatever it is.
What do you want to change?
I think the medical freedom part that I kind of pushed aside. I think in the first round.
I need to
advance that a little bit further than I probably did.
Yeah, I have medical freedom in my final four of the biggest worries that we have in Biden's America right now. The Biden bracket buster challenge that I put online, and I asked everybody from the top 16 seeds, 16 different issues, which ones are the most concerning to you. Medical freedom was a 5 seed going up against EV mandates, the 4 seed. I chose medical freedom as a bigger concern than the EV mandates, even though the EV mandates are very serious. You skipped right over that one, didn't you?
I chose EV mandates.
You knocked them out in the first round. Knocked out medical freedom.
Yeah, and now after hearing that last story, I think that my bracket needs to be changed, if you don't mind.
I advanced medical freedom into the second round, where they faced the winner of abortion and flood of fentanyl, and abortion won that one for me. And then in the standoff between medical freedom and abortion, I chose medical freedom. I'm more worried about medical freedom because guess what? Abortion only impacts the unborn babies of women who become pregnant and have to make that decision. Medical freedom will impact every freaking single one of us, Seth. That's the reason I went the way I did. It will impact all of us.
But see, I went a different route because I didn't think that they would have the whatevers to go through this again. I just didn't.
How did you think they wouldn't do this again? The only reason Joe Biden is president right now, the only reason is because they were able to weaponize COVID and allow election fraud to take place on a scale never before done. Everybody knows Trump was on his way to winning a second term. Everyone knows that. The left knows that even. And the only way they could mitigate it was to do what they did, but drop boxes, stuff them filled with phony ballots. You know, they drug me or the election mules highlighted on video in Dinesh D'Souza's movie shows that. And then, of course, all of the mail-in balloting. Completely unverifiable, no signatures required, no identification required, no validity to the actual ballots. Who knows if they didn't grab one and go to the printer and just make off 500 copies of those and sign them all with scribbles and send them in? Mail-in balloting is literally the least secure way to vote in the world. That's why no other countries do it. And it's the only way they won, Seth. What made you think they wouldn't go for round two?
I understand that, but I think it was so transparent how that happened that I think that how could they get away with it again? Because people would stand up and actually say, enough is enough. We're going to, you know, this is not going to let it happen. And nor would I think that Americans would put up with lockdowns again. I don't think that Americans would put up with losing their livelihoods ever again. They're not going to start handing out cash the way that they did before. I just didn't think it was going to be possible. Now it looks like it's more than possible.
But what do you mean, stand up? What do you mean that Americans would stand up and not allow this to happen again? How do they stop it?
There has to be a breaking point for at some point in America where we actually stand up and do something. Whether it's and I would never
what
call
does stand
for,
up mean, Seth? Well, what does stand up mean? Physically stand up and fight?
Yes, we need to stand up. Oh. Sometimes we need to take to the streets and let our voices be heard. The good people, not the people in Minneapolis or whatever burning down buildings. I'm talking about the people that are Americans here.
Well, but Seth. When you tell people to stand up and fight, what do they think is going to happen to them when they do? Because I've got news for you. They already tried to stand up and fight the last time. They did it on January 6th. They went there to fight peacefully, in other words, just to scream and shout and chant and demand an audit of the electors to make sure that what was about to be done was on the up and up. And you saw what it turned into because they got attacked and because they got provoked and everything went crazy. And since that day, the federal government's mission has been to send a message to you, Seth in Cleveland, to send a message to you and me and everybody else. Don't ever even think about standing up. Don't ever even think about fighting back. Don't ever think about us an insurrection again. Because some of those people, Seth, have been held now for 3 years without a trial.
I totally understand that. But at some point, there has to be a breaking point with Americans where they stop putting up with this. Where they stop putting up with what this administration is trying to do, which is actually destroy you. There has to be a point where we stand up where the Marios, the Bob Francis, me, stand up and say, we're not going to put up with it anymore. And voting isn't working anymore.
No.
So I don't know what you do. I would never call for riots and all that kind of stuff. But at what point do you stand up and do something other than say, oh, we're going to go to the ballot box? That does not work.
Well, I'm waiting for somebody to suggest to me what would work when you say stand up. Because if you say stand up and chant and it turns into something physical, you are going to prison. And you are going to prison forever without a trial. And I hate to sound this way. Do you know who Karl Rove is? Of
yes.
course you do.
Yeah.
Karl Rove, I got an audio clip. I don't know if I can find it in time, but I saw it this morning, and I was just shaking my freaking head at this. Karl Rove said that the January 6th prisoners are not hostages. They are thugs.
I heard that.
Now, I didn't hear the context. And some of them did some things that they shouldn't have done. Anybody that punched a cop or anybody that did some really bad things in there should be held accountable by the letter of the law to the extent that anybody else would. But, Seth, they're not holding these people accountable to the extent anybody else would. They're going 10 times harder on these individuals, the ones who did bad things and the ones who did no bad things, but they were just there. They're going so much harder on them, not to punish them, but to scare the crap out of you. So that the next time they steal an election, the next time they play these games, you won't even think to coming down to the Capitol. You won't even think about going and holding a sign or protesting, because if you get caught up in the mob or in the crowd or in the chaos or in the riot, your life is over.
Maybe we start playing games too. I mean, maybe we start fighting back the way that they're fighting. I'm tired of playing nice. We need to take back what is ours, which is this country. The people need their country back. And I don't know how we do it, but it has to be done.
Yeah, you're right. It does. And I think I may have been able to stumble across this here just since I brought it up here. Listen to this.
And one of the critical mistakes made in this campaign is that Donald Trump has now said, I'm going to pardon those people because they're hostages. No, they're not. They're thugs.
That's Karl Rove. That's Republican strategist Karl Rove. And I don't know what the crowd was something called The Beat with Ari Melber, whatever that is. They have a live studio audience, as you heard. He just called them thugs. Seth, the media has been conditioned to, and in fact, they're doing some of the conditioning, to refer to the January Sixers as being deserving of life in prison without the possibility of parole. Whether they held a sign, whether they walked through with a police escort, whether they shoved anybody, whether they did nothing at all, they are all being treated the same way, with the express intent and purpose of making sure no one ever challenges the government again.
Well, the media also refers to half the country as deplorables and thugs and everything else. There comes a point where we got to stand up.
That's the point. They don't want your deplorable ass going out there and doing something to try to rescue and retain your country.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.